Getting ready to go fishing, and if the wind would back off, oh my goodness, we got a lot of wind out there, boys and girls, and a bit chilly in the morning. Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm tired of people from up north saying, well, I live up north because we got four seasons. Well, we have four seasons here. We got winter during the dark, in the morning we have spring, we have summer all day, and then we have fall in the evening, and then it goes back to winter. We get all four seasons. We just do it in a day. It takes them all year. Florida can do all that in one day. We don't need a year to get all four seasons in. Right?
No, that's a good point.
Well, you got the Southwest Florida twist. In the morning you get in, you get in your vehicle, and you twist the thermostat all the way to the right to the red lines. You want it nice and hot. And then you get back in it a couple hours later to go somewhere, and you twist it all the way to the left where the blue numbers are. So, twist to the right, twist to the left, up in the middle right as I'm going home.
There you go.
So,
perfect.
That's the Southwest Florida twist. You twist your thermostat back and forth in the vehicle.
I think it's the same thing at the house, too, though.
Yeah. I don't know, it kind of is there. Let's see. Cool weather. And what does every boy's fantasy turn to when it gets cold out? Thoughts of sheephead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, hey, I'll go with that.
Sure. My thoughts went a different direction, but sure, I'll go with you on that.
No, it's thoughts of sheephead. Of course it is. I spent the last couple days, we've done huge amounts of remodels at the store, refaced the front. Gave the old building a new face on it. Looks pretty cool, I think.
Absolutely.
And then we double-sized the store, so we're literally twice the size we were. We added a seminar area, and right as we're kind of getting that done, finally got the reel cases in. We're getting the reel room where the rods and reels all are all in there, that kind of together. And the bait tanks go bad, and about 3,000 shrimp die. So, for the last 2 days, we've been tearing the bait room apart.
You been eating shrimp?
Yeah. No, because they kind of went out overnight, so the next morning it wasn't real, real pleasant. So,
yeah, it's pretty
and
bad.
Those old tanks in the back, there was just no way to revive them anymore. So I ended up having to cut all that out, take the back part of the back wall down, get all that stuff hauled out, put the wall back together, and got all new bins and tanks and new filters, and everything's living and life is wonderful and good. And we've got a new fiddler crab bin. It's got thousands of fiddler crabs in it. Lots of happy bait, after...
Don't fiddler crabs fight with each other when you put them in a thing like that?
No, not really. I mean, they probably do fight with each other, but they're not even strong enough to hurt each other.
Right.
When they close that big claw down, they scare you, but they can't hurt you. But going into, where's some sheephead, Robert?
Placida has been ate up with them. For the shorebound fishermen, Placida's been on fire. And then El Jobin's really started to pick up the last couple of days because of this cooler weather. It's finally getting a move up into the harbor, finally. But if you're in a boat, anywhere along the Placida Trestle, the Tom Adams Bridge, even some of the mangrove shorelines and creeks there along Whidden Creek, Whidden Bay, and even up into Lemon Bay, hearing some really good reports. And I haven't heard a lot at the jetties, but a guy was in yesterday who went surfing, which is normal when we get these really bad winds, and he saw a couple guys fishing for sheep's head and had a couple on, but I haven't had accurate reports of actual catches.
All right, I got a question for you guys. If you're fishing along the mangroves, you see some big sheephead or you catch one, would it be a good idea to have like a half a dozen fiddler crabs or a dozen fiddler crabs with you? And if you're fishing for them up against the mangroves, is it going to be bobber, freeline? It wouldn't be a jig head. I can't see it. you know, like a jig head working, can you?
A lot of guys seem to catch them, though, by accident with jig heads and shrimp when they're fishing for redfish and snook.
So maybe they go along kind of looking at the bottom?
Yeah, I think they feed closer to the bottom of those roots of those mangrove systems. But it's also shallow water, so they only got to move 6 inches one way or the other and cover
right,
their bases.
Right, they're only in 18 inches, 24 inches of water, yeah. So bottom to top, I guess, is fair game, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I've ever put a feather crab on a jig head.
No. I never have either. I've always used shrimp, you know, personally for them over there when doing that.
RJ?
I've never fished with a fiddler crab, okay. So I wouldn't even know how to hook them.
Well, when you look at a fiddler crab, you have legs sticking out of each side, four legs on each side, and then the body rises up, and, you know, you have the body of the crab. The idea is to go in between the legs and stay as close to the outer shell as you can and bring it back, the hook back out, right at the top of the shell. So that when you go through the legs, it's very soft. If you can go through the corner, because they're kind of cone-shaped where they're narrow at the bottom than at the top, and you can go through that one bit right on the side. But I like going through the legs, kind of straight up along the body, and coming back out right on the edge of where they go flat on the top. And that's a really nice way. You're not trying to go through the shell twice. So you have a really good chance it's going to be a good hook set. And I always hook them through the side, not through the back or the front. I always want them hooked through the side because fiddler crabs can crawl forward, backward, side to side. But quite often, like every other crab, they do like most commonly go sideways.
Yeah, when they move quickly, they go sideways. If you approach them, you know, in their ditches and stuff, they're all running sideways. So I could see that, hook them that way, and that's the way they're going to try to run on the bottom.
And when you fish with them, that's going to be the most natural look, I would say.
I agree with that.
I would almost think if I was going to do that, I'd take a little tiny float and pitch it up by the mangroves. On the other hand, though, with a float, between the bait and the float, your bait sometimes helicopters.
Right.
So that's going to make it really hard to cast it right up by the trees. So maybe a jig head would be good.
Jig head or a little tiny split shot, depending on the little bit of current.
But at this time of year, if you're going out back on the flats, because you usually find bigger ones. Now, you're not going to see a lot of them, but you're going to find larger sheephead, you know, in that 14, 18-inch range, you know, I mean, bigger stuff.
Right.
Twos and threes going along the mangroves. It'd be nice to, if you had a couple fiddler crabs, just throw them in with the shrimp. And maybe that would be the key to getting those to stop and actually look at something.
Oh, absolutely. I think you're right on the money there. Now, I think one thing we should mention, too, is this year they did change the bag limit of sheep's head. It went from 15 down to 8 now, which, yep, I think is a good thing because, I mean, what are you going to do with 15 sheep's head? It's a lot of meat.
Yeah, you know? And I'm not big on frozen fish. Now, I do have at least one or two fish dinners in the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always like one or two, and that's in case somebody comes over, you know, unexpected guest. But usually I'm going to go out, catch them, take them home, and eat them. Frozen fish to me is not the reason I live in Florida.
Right.
So, you know,
and I think when you freeze fish, especially the white fleshed fish, it gets mushy. After it thaws out, it doesn't have that same thickness, spongy,
flaky.
Yeah,
thing,
yeah. It goes kind of mushy, more Jello like than you would want.
Changes the texture of the meat.
Yeah,
it just changes the texture. I'm not sure mushy is exactly the word I would look for, but it's definitely not the same as fresh.
It's not the same when you get it fresh, right?
And the whole reason I live in Florida and no Fish and Frank thing is I can go out, catch a couple fish, take them home and eat them.
That's right.
That's, you know, and it's the cleanest way to live because if you're catching it, you're cleaning it, you're cooking it, you're not going to waste much. You're going to take your time, get the fillets nice, not waste meat, not waste the carcass. I feed it back to the crabs and all the rest of that stuff. And the whole idea in life is not about not killing or killing or whatever, because whether you eat grass or broccoli, you got to kill that to eat it.
Right.
The object is not to waste stuff. So the more you do yourself, a little blood on your hands, in my opinion, keeps your soul a little cleaner because you're not wasting anything. where if you let other people do it, you may feel like you're clean, but a lot of waste goes into commercial stuff.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of stuff dies, so you cannot get your hands dirty. Get your hands a little dirty and don't waste things. It's much better. Now, trout fishing is really big right now. A lot of trout going around. How about larger trout? Anything, anybody hear anything on bigger trout?
Stump Pass. I've been hearing, not Stump Pass itself, but Lemon Bay in the area of Stump Pass and even above the Tom Adams Bridge. That whole area through there has been doing pretty good. It's been so windy, it's been blowing a lot of that shallow grass flats that they have there and moving those fish out into the little bit deeper channels with the little deeper grass flats. Guys that are drifting over that, throwing the cow shad tails and the flukes are doing.
So the DOA cow shads, that's very popular this time of year, really works good. If that water drops another 5 degrees, I'm going to switch over to either the Mirror Lure or the Strike King.
Right.
And I'm going to put an eighth or a 16th ounce jig head on, and I'm going to get something with a either the Rage Swimmer or the Marsh Minnow. I don't know why. I don't know if I ever tried to say that before. Marsh Minnow. All right. Let's go camping. Got sticks, fire. All right. I just can't help it. But the reason being is I'm going to slow down. Now, I don't think I'm going to do that as much for trout. But I think for the redfish and the snook.
Yeah, for the added bycatch, absolutely.
Because you can reel it, really, those big paddle tails are on very loosely. The DOA is made a little better, it withstands a few more fish, but you can't reel it really, really slow and get the tail action out of it.
Right.
Like you can with the Strike King Rage Minnow, I think it is, and the Mirror Lure Marsh Minnow. Those can be reeled very, very slowly and with a very light jig head. You can just barely crank them back in. I mean, really slow, a quarter mile an hour, and they will stay swimming, and the tail will work.
Yeah, the action on those on a slow retrieve is amazing. And even if you've got strong current area, holding them still in that current, like if you happen to be standing on the Eljo Bean Bridge, you can just fish that thing almost vertical without having to do anything because it's got
so
much life to it.
Well, you've got to use a lot of heavier jig head.
Right. But the current just moves that tail so much.
If you've got an eighth or a 16th ounce, a lot of times that current will just lift that jig right to the surface.
But then you got top water at the same time.
Then you got top water, that's true. But a lot of trout on the east side of the harbor, mm-hmm. Not a ton of big ones.
Right.
How's the sandbar on the west side of the harbor?
It's been okay. Not a lot of guys have been fishing it because it's been a little lumpy over there. You know, I would think that it should be doing good, but... You know, that area over there, you've got to cover a lot more ground.
All right. You know. One of my favorite trout spots is Alligator Bay. Out in front of Port Charlotte Beach, over to Grassy Point.
Yeah.
I drift the canal mouse out into there. And, I mean, I'm literally just run the boat up into the wind, motor all the way down, idle as far as you can up into the wind. And then when your motor starts to bump, stop, cast your lines out, fish your way back. You know, I raise the motor up so the boat will drift a little bit, then put the motor all the way back down. Because when I get on the other side and it's shallow, I want the motor to catch first.
Right.
The motor is my, okay, I'm not going to run aground bit. Because as the wind's drifting you across, you're catching fish, having a good time, and then the motor catches, the boat will swing around, and you go, okay, reel in, raise the motor up, back out of there, go back up the wind. But right. You never go aground doing this. It's simple, it's easy, it's not going to hurt your motor. Because it's mostly sand and mud there.
Yeah.
So just idling forward as slow as you can go. When the boat starts going boom, 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 you know, you're okay, I'm tagging the bottom. Stop, fish, and let the wind drift back the other way. I throw the tandem rigs, two jigs at the same time. Two curl tails attached to the same leader. The DOA Deadly Tandem. The DOA Deadly Tandem. That's my favorite one right now. And I love that fishing out in that Alligator Bay right in front of Port Charlotte Beach, all the way on out, just doing the drift, casting those, jigging them back in. Catch a lot of trout there, but I think it's become a drive-by spot.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely one of those way overlooked spots because they just pull out of the canal or out of the boat ramp there and
Well, you know, I don't blame them. They pay $15,000 for a motor.
Right.
Forget the boat. They got $14,000-$15,000 in a motor. Well, you want to run it. Why? Catching fish becomes secondary to hearing that motor fire up.
Yeah.
You know, when you could go right to the end of the canal or put your boat in at Port Charlotte Beach and literally be fishing in 2 seconds.
I got one gentleman that was in the other day. I'm just remembering this. He was in, I don't know, Thursday, Friday last week. He's actually been drifting and trolling, motoring a lot out in front of your place. From your place up to the power lines, he's been getting some very nice trout. And he's working a rattle trap and soft plastics on a jig head and just fan casting in all different depths of water. He's covering a lot of ground, but his average fish is like 18 inches. He's catching very few short ones,
well,
better quality fish, but not numbers, but worth fishing for.
If you're going to fish that area out in front of Harbor Heights and on up to the power lines, it's 20 to 50 casts per fish.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't, okay, we're not telling you there's a lot of fish up there. What Robert is telling you is some really nice fish up there.
Yes.
And there's a lot bigger trout up there. You can find big jacks. You can find some great snook, redfish, and all that. But they're not as plentiful as some of the other areas. So when you go up there, you got to think more like a muskie fisherman. Now, I'm going to go up there and cast a whole bunch, catch a nicer fish, cast a whole bunch more, catch a nicer fish. You know, you're going to be, I would say if you were catching 1.5 an hour, you'd be really good. But they're going to be really nice fish.
And, yeah.
You know, better than average what you're going to find in the harbor.
Well, and that's the same similar scenario as what you get right here at the 41 Bridge and the Myakka River.
Okay. You know,
that area is kind of similar. Because you've got the sawgrass flats around there. You've got some deeper oyster bars.
No, wait a minute. You're talking about the 41 Bridge in Myakka. Which one is similar to which one?
To your area up by you.
Oh, okay.
Up there on up in Harbor.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Austrian segue. We were talking about this, then all of a sudden we're talking about Austria.
Well, all right. Yeah. It's just the similar scenario, habitat and everything else. You're fishing a lot, but you are catching a lot better quality fish. And the only reason why I'm mentioning...
So should you use purple?
I would. I would absolutely use purple.
You know about purple, don't you, RJ?
I do.
Purple is the one strange color. There's a lot of colors that just do strange stuff. But I like...
There's a lot of strange names and colors.
Yeah. Purple has got one thing going for it. You're not going to catch as many fish as some of the other colors will, usually. Sometimes it catches a lot of fish, but most of the time it's not. When we would do snook fishing for money, bet money on most fish, or I would use other colors. But if we were betting money on biggest fish, always go to purple. I'm going to catch a few less, but they're going to be noticeably bigger than ones I will catch on any other color.
Absolutely.
And the same thing with the trout. And it all started with the Mirror Lure Purple Demon, the 52 PD. The Purple Demon. I don't even know if they're still making it. I haven't looked because people don't, you know, they're into more modern colors. This is an older color now. It's been around since the 80s. But it's always staggered me how much bigger the fish are on purple lures than they are in any other color.
I think they still make it because I think we have it in the 17 MR.
Yeah.
I think so.
I would still want it in the 15 because if I'm looking for bigger fish, I want that little bigger bait. The 17's nice for a lot of fish.
Right.
But the 52 or the TT, that's where you get your bigger fish from.
Oh, absolutely.
Do we hazard any guesses as to why purple is better for the bigger fish than the smaller schoolies?
I don't even know if this is out there amongst the industry.
No, I've heard it from a number of people. If you want to catch bigger trout, especially with the trout, if you want to catch bigger trout, use purple.
It's just something we found back in the 80s, and then again in the 90s and all that, when I had time to go out and actually fish, we would go to places like Elgin. You had to use only lures, and we would go there and bet so much per fish. And it would, at the end of the night, say at $1 a fish, you know, one guy would have, you know, he'd owe me $50 and I'd owe him 48. You know, the bet would end up with like $2 at the end of the night. But we would do literally dozens of snook a night there. And I can still do it. This fish is still there. But I think people are forgetting some of the techniques that we use. Now, speaking of that, I want to do one more fish, then we're going to go kind of my other thought. How's the redfish doing right now? I know redfish and snook are both closed, but how are the redfish doing?
They're actually doing pretty good if you can get into some of the back creeks on the east wall. You got to pick and choose your tides, but there's been a lot of nicer quality fish back there. Like,
You're talking about on the east side?
Yeah.
You got like Line Gourd and all them way back up in there?
Yeah. Some of those deep creeks and potholes have been holding some pretty good fish back in there. You know, the west wall has those bigger creeks like Oyster Creek and Trout Creek, but I haven't heard much over there, and I think it's just because of mainly the wind.
Yeah, I think people just are not there.
Right.
But
now that's better quality fish, but quantity fish is definitely Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, the whole backside of Boca Grande, and inside the Boca Grande Canal system has even had some really good quality redfish under the docks. But in Turtle and Bull, it's been a mixed barrage from little rat reds 12 inches all the way up to some fish being in that 22, 24 inch range.
All right. Lemon Bay doing anything on redfish?
Mixed reports on that. Most of those have been smaller fish. You know, up there, what is that, Night Creek, I think, is one of them that I had a guy tell me about that he caught a bunch of 14, 15-inch redfish in it. But mixed reports. And then Carl was up there the other day, and I think they caught a couple legal-sized redfish, but not big-sized.
That's right. Carl was telling me that Lemon Bay was loaded up. He caught a ton of fish up there the other day.
Yeah, he did really, really well. And the coolest part about all this is, I mean, even I don't believe 90% of what I hear on the news and all this stuff, but FWC website and the news and what I'm hearing from a lot of other people, red tide's pretty much zero to background concentrations up and down all of Charlotte County right now.
Charlotte County, yes.
It's clear.
Up around Tampa, they still have some pretty bad issues with it. And I've been watching, I get the weekly updates and the biweekly updates in the red tide. Still little tiny bits around the Gulf. It's not gone, boys and girls. It's at a low ebb, but it's not gone. It will be back.
Right.
And the cold weather, this is not cold. This is cool. So it's going to slow it down.
Yeah.
But it's not going to kill it. It doesn't. Cool weather doesn't kill it. 32 degrees would probably kill it.
Yeah.
You know, because salt water will actually get 32 degrees. Fresh water only gets 33, and then it forms ice. The ice insulates the bottom, and it still is 33, 35 degrees all winter. But in salt water, the first foot to 3 foot can easily go 26, 28 degrees, which means anything in that layer is dead. Fish, plant, anything. That would kill it. But without an actual freeze, frost, no. Not a killer, just a, red tide wants a woolly sweater.
Right.
You know. All right. Let's see. Dock fishing. Lots and lots of questions about dock fishing.
Yeah, that's been the most common question lately.
Well, if you're on a pier, but let's get to the pier in a second. But I'm going to say the one thing fishing at a dock behind somebody's house and fishing on a pier is both places people have the exact same thought pattern. I'm going to get out as far as I can, then I'm going to cast as far out there as possible. And then you see the guys come along with a boat coming and casting as close to shore and as close to the pier as possible. So the guys on land want to throw out there as far as they can to be out there where the boats can go, and the guy in the boats want to cast as close to shore and under the piers as they can get.
It's kind of funny how that works.
And they say people on the boats catch more fish. I wonder why this is.
Right.
Let's talk about fishing in a canal. Predatory fish. Now, you have a dock, and the end of your dock, the outside edge of your dock. From the outside edge to your seawall, back towards your house to the seawall, is where your predatory fish are going to be. Same thing across the canal. From the outside edge back to the seawall there. That's where predatory fish hang out. So what's in the middle?
All sorts.
Scavengers.
Scavengers.
So every year we get people come down and they go out to fish on their dock behind the house and they come in complaining all they're catching is catfish. And you ask them, well, okay, are you get out on your dock? Do you put a sinker on and throw your bait out in the middle of the canal? Well, yeah. That's how you fish in salt water. And my reply would be, well, if you're fishing for the catfish, why are you surprised you're catching them?
Then they give you more of a confused look.
But canals kind of belly down in the middle, so where would anything dead go? Down in the bottom, right?
Yep.
And where do catfish like to eat the most? Off the bottom.
Yeah.
So a sinker would put your bait right down there. You're in the area where the catfish want to run, putting your bait down there for them, and then being surprised that you catch them.
Yeah.
So if you're fishing for catfish, why are you surprised you're catching them?
So then, you know, what would you do differently about that? You know, the main...
Well, the number one answer from people when they come in and when they're catching catfish is, well, I've been using shrimp and all I'm catching is catfish. You got anything else I can use for bait? Well, it always reminds me. Now, I know for a fact, if you're German heritage, you are not allowed to eat spaghetti because Italians are not allowed to eat kielbasa. It doesn't work that way. If you're Italian, you only eat spaghetti and pasta and that kind of stuff. But if you're German, you want dumplings and sausages and stuff. You're not allowed to go back and forth. And fish only eat one thing. They don't eat just other fish and shrimp and crabs and anything that's on the bottom of catfish. So if you changed your bait, would you change your fish?
Not if you didn't change your technique.
Right. If you're, like you said before, if you're fishing for catfish, you're going to catch catfish.
I mean, they're scavengers. They're opportunistic feeders. They're going to take it live or dead, fish, shrimp, scented soft plastics. If it's just sitting out there on the bottom, acting like something dead, they're pretty much going to eat it.
That, to me, it's pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
So because of the canals bellying down towards the middle, anything dead would roll there. And that's going to be scavenger heaven right there. So if you're throwing a bait down there on the bottom and wondering why you're catching catfish, my only question would be, well, why are you fishing for them then? So anyway, and changing the bait is not going to do it. So other techniques you can use. A bobber is very effective while I'm canal fishing. Now, when you cast it out, that bobber is not going to sit in front of you. And if it does, that means the tide's not moving. And I would say I would reel in and go back to the house and wait a half an hour for the tide to start moving.
Right.
Because most of the time, moving water is what gets fish biting. Think of it this way. If the tide's coming in and all that current's going and it kind of washes sand up, it puts it on the backside of a shell or around a stick or kind of fills in a little bit of a hole and all the bait kind of gets, you know, down in where it goes. Now, as the tide stops, the fish don't really know where to go. Now, sheephead, I fish on a dead stop tide. If the water's not moving, I fish for sheephead. If I'm an otter, fish a reef, I go after sheephead and snappers.
Because
they bite really good when the tide's dead still. Because, like, remember the natives in the Philippines, they say when the trade winds stop, they would kind of freak out because the wind blows every day. Mm-hmm. But every once in a while, the wind would stop, and they'd, like, do dances and stuff because the gods were, you know, upset and the world was going to end. Well, when the currents, the tide's flowing one direction, the fish want to face into that tide. Like any other wild animal, they want to smell what's coming at them. They want to see what's being washed down to them. But when that tide stops, they tend to mill around a little bit. So if my bait's behind them, they're going to turn around because the tide, they don't have a direction to look.
Right.
So they're going to mill around more. But in the canal, when the tide's going one way, it's washed everything on that other side of whatever it is, and all the bait's kind of hidden in. Now, when the tide turns, starts going the other way, it's going to start blowing all that little bits of sand up from the backside of those rocks to put it back on the other side of it, around the other side of the piling. And that's going to put little tiny brine shrimp and little tiny crabs, it's going to start to expose them, that were hidden on that side. So the fish all started looking around on this stuff because everything's coming out to being exposed. I mean, little tiny stuff. And bigger bait comes, and bigger fish come, and bigger fish comes. The whole food chain, food cycle from tiny up through monster, everybody starts to eat because all this stuff is being exposed. Now, towards the end of the tide, it's the same as it was when the tide started. It's all kind of settled in, and it's after a tide change, usually is when the biggest bite will happen. More at the end of a tide, the bite's going to slow down. At the beginning of the tide, you've got to break the tide into three parts. Building up to speed, maintaining speed, and then slowing down. So the first two-thirds of the tide are the best, the first third and the middle third. Then that end one with the water slowing down, because water just doesn't go and then stop and then turn around and go the other way. It's got to build up speed, get running, and then slow down to stop and turn and go the other way.
Right. You know, and depending on your distance from certain areas, sometimes you've got obstructions that can slow it down even a little bit more or speed it up. And then you've also got some of your eddies that will form behind your pilings or your neighbor's dock or your neighbor's boat, depending on how it's set up. So being real observant of what all that little bit of water movement does from one tide to the next, or even one wind direction to the next, because sometimes you don't necessarily need the tide. You can actually have the wind work for you, too. That can sometimes create a little bit of activity for the fish.
Well, what I want to do is take a bobber, cast it out as far as I can out in the middle, and as it drifts down, do you ever go fishing somebody, like if there's a boat there, a dock? I use, you're getting wild there, Robert. Don't lean on the table. I'll actually use that so I can get right up under a pier or a dock.
Well, if you're fishing for predatory fish like a snook, that's what you want to do. You want something, I would think, suspended in about the middle of the water column and as close to structure as you can get it. And a bobber makes that real easy to do, especially if you're watching which way the water's going.
Yeah, because all I got to do is, as the bobber, the tide's taking my bobber, it's going to go from the middle, it's going to start pulling it around so it goes straight, so it's going to get closer and closer to the seawall. I can just open my bail, feed out a little bit more line, get some more line out there, get a little more distance, and I can actually like lay that up against somebody's boat where I don't do any damage because I didn't cast that. I just drifted my bobber up to it, or I can let it drift right up underneath the neighbor's dock and literally get a foot or two right underneath, or actually all the way to the middle of their dock. But that's where your most predatory fish are. That allows me to do it without even casting. I'm just kind of playing, you know, opening the bail, pull out some line, watch what happens, pull out some line, watch what happens. And I can steer it right where I want it. And on those boats, now, I'm always trying to figure how deep a draft a boat is, because I want to be at least a foot below the bottom of the boat. I don't know if that's good or if I should be... I always want to figure about a foot, but maybe a little bit more below whatever the draft is. Like if the boat's drafting 2 feet, I want my bait down like 3. So when the bobber lays up against it, that's right where the fish are going to be hanging out in the shade.
Yeah, and I think it's going to depend on the depth of water that you're in. You know, because if you're thinking you're in, a 6-foot canal, you know, you might want to go down a little bit deeper, but the key thing is to experiment a little bit and see where some of those fish are going to be at. That's the best part about bobber fishing, is that you can adjust that depth of that bobber to try to find where those fish might be located in the water column. Because like snook, I find really like to kind of hug the bottom of the boat itself. So if that bait's coming right along parallel to the hull of the boat, you stand a much better chance if it's, you know, 6 inches to a foot below it. But if you want your mangrove snapper or your sheep's head, you might want to set it a little bit deeper so it's only within 6 inches of the bottom, where they might stand a better chance of coming up off the bottom and grabbing your bait.
Okay, I was wondering where you're going with that, but that made sense.
Made a lot of sense to me, too.
I was sitting here waiting, going, okay.
I'm taking notes. I was writing all that down.
Yeah, where was he going? But catfish, are they edible?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go sail cat.
Sail cats are definitely a lot more desirable food-wise than the hardheads as a general consensus. And probably the primary reason for that is a sail cat is more of a predator than a scavenger. It's still a catfish and it's still an opportunistic feeder and scavenger, but it's very common to sometimes catch them on an artificial lure or a live bait swimming around out there. I've even cooked them on topwaters before. Versus a hardhead, you very seldom get that. So since their diet is just a little bit more varied, it seems to have a little bit more consistency to it as far as flavor and texture goes.
Now, RJ, have you noticed the difference between the hardhead and the sail cats? Over the years, I've played with both of them a lot. I've eaten both of them. Any preference or non-preference, or you just haven't dealt with them at all?
Well, sail cat, I agree with Robert. They just taste better.
Okay. Now, the one thing I find is with hardheads. Now, the hardhead catfish is the one with the shorter fins on it. The sail cat has the same fins, but with long extensions on it. It's more like wings off the side. You know,
it's almost angelic looking.
Yeah, they're actually really beautiful fish, and they call it the Jesus fish. Yes, boys and girls, it has a religious connotation to it. Because if you take the skull of a sail cat and dry it out, and you get all the flesh off and stuff inside, and I had one of mine fell apart recently. I don't think I have one left now. But it literally looks like a crucifix, like Jesus on the cross.
Yeah.
And they have the otolith bones inside, those little round balls.
Mm-hmm.
So here you've got something that looks almost identical. You look it up on Google, crucifix fish. Actually, Bing, Google tracks everything you do. Maybe try DuckDuckGo or some of those. Try and stay off Google if at all possible.
They actually used to sell them in a lot of tourist traps through the 90s.
Crucifix fish.
Yeah. And I just gave one to my mother to take back home with her because I found one out on the beach with some of the other little bones and stuff, but that was pretty
cool. What's really neat is the little bones inside, the little round bones, when you shake it, it is supposed to represent the guards gambling dice for the robes of Christ. But, I mean, it has this whole big thing that's with the sail cap.
Right.
So they may be slimy and they may be ugly, but they got some cool parts, too.
Right, absolutely.
So, but how do you cook them? How do you start? And that's filleting them. The first thing to understand about it, you do not do it like a freshwater catfish. You'd be there a week trying to skin that thing.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
You know, with a freshwater cat, you stick it on a nail on a board, you just make a cut around the head and peel the skin off. With the saltwater cat, you do fillet them. But you do want to understand there is no meat from the ribs up towards the head. So I'll take my finger, go along and find where the ribs stop, going back towards the tail, and I make my cut there. I cut down to the backbone, turn the knife flat, cut that off, cut the meat off the skin, and then do the other side. So basically only filleting the tail section, because there is zero meat by the ribs. I mean, if you were on Naked and Afraid and you had not eaten in 12 days, you might cook the whole catfish. But for those of us, and there's a burger joint down the street, you still got a buck in your pocket, trust me, only fillet the tail out.
Yeah.
Now, when you get that out, I like to take and cut it in about 1-inch cubes. And so you've got these little 1-inch cubes of fish, but I pat the outside dry with a paper towel. I want it as dry as possible on the outside. Because what I've done to make ready for them is I've got hot oil going and I've got either instant pancake mix or instant waffle mix, whichever one you like better. Now, the kind I'm talking about is the kind where you just add water, except don't use water. Go down and get a real beer. It's got to be a Samuel Adams or one of these little brands. Look at the alcohol content. Should be over 5%. It should be a full actual beer. Not a Budweiser, a Coors, a Miller, or any of those. Those are beer-flavored water. You don't have any taste in it.
Right.
It's got to be more like a real German beer. And any of the little specialty ones will
Oatmeal stout.
What is it?
Oatmeal stout.
Oatmeal stout?
Yeah. It's a super dark, dark lager.
Okay, I'm not really a beer drinker. I drink beer, but it's not my thing.
Comes in a clear glass, but you turn it upside down.
Yeah.
Or you look at it, it looks like oil, but you turn it upside down. It's a clear bottle. It's scary stuff.
Wow.
But it's really strong.
Well, then I'd vote Guinness for that recipe.
Guinness. There you go.
Okay.
Guinness would be a perfect one for
Guinness
that.
Guinness would be, in my opinion, a top choice.
Let me get on a horn now with Ireland and tell them what to do with those sea cats that they're always catching.
So what they do is you, instead of water, just use the Guinness beer and same amounts as you would to make pancakes or waffles. Now, we've cut the sail cat up into one-inch squares. We had it all patted dry while it was still in the flay form. And then you put all those cubes in the bowl with the beer batter fish. Stir it all up until it sticks. If you do not pat the fillets dry, the batter will not stick to the fish. It has to be dry in order for the batter to stick. And once you've got that batter sticking to them, you patted them all nice and dry, stir them in good, and then start dropping them in the deep fryer when they're golden brown. The reason I cut into half inch or 1 inch cubes is when the batter's brown, the fish is done. If you cut them into bigger pieces, it takes a lot longer for the batter. The batter gets brown before the fish gets cooked.
Right.
So I'm using smaller pieces so that as soon as that batter's brown, I can take them out and they're cooked all the way through and it's wonderful. It's amazing. And just for the record, on a fish, the epidermal layer, the stuff that keeps the bacteria from getting into the fish's body, the same as an epidermal layer on a human. When you get infected is when you get cut. It's not the break in the skin, it's the break in the epidermal layer that allows you to get an infection. The bacteria otherwise sits outside your skin, can't get in. Same thing with a fish. The more slime, the more the fish is protected against bacteria. So which fillets would have the least bacteria of all? Catfish.
Right.
They got more slime than anything.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
Probably one of the safest ones to eat out of all of them. So, but cube them up, mix them with Guinness and waffle mix or Guinness and pancake mix, get your portions, deep fry them up, amazing meal. Now, the best part about it, if you have friends from up north and you go out to the dock behind your house, you go out to the pier and you start catching the sail cats. Well, as you start filleting them up, you put the carcass in the water, it just brings more of the dopey buggers up. So the more you catch, the more you fillet, the more you catch. I mean, this is not a really highly evolved species of fish.
No, it's not.
So,
yeah. But a tasty one, though, too.
Done right. My only problem with the catfish is it's easy to dry it out when you cook it. If you just put it on the grill and you're not basting it or putting a lot of stuff on it,
yeah,
it's
you can't,
dry.
Yeah, you can't grill catfish. But yeah, I think catfish is one of the best ingredients for gumbo.
For gumbo.
For gumbo. You make a gumbo with those little catfish cubes in it, boy, and that's some good stuff.
I could see that.
I've never thought about it, but I'll go with you on that. All right. Offshore fishing. What's going on out there?
I think we got to go back to one thing about catfish is handling them.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because people don't realize it's literally our most dangerous fish we have here in Florida. You know, hands down, more dangerous than sharks, stingrays, barracuda,
combined.
Yeah,
combined. It's the single most dangerous fish we have.
Yeah, you want to handle them. You know, if people are used to catching channel cats or bullheads up north, you hold them the same way. You grab your hand around those pectoral fins to
keep
them
by the belly side, not from the back. You always grab them by the belly.
Right.
If you grab them by the back, you will get hurt. If you grab them by the belly, take your time, slow and steady.
Yep.
You'll never get hurt.
Or you buy one of those catfish grippers and you'll definitely not get hurt because that's the best
invention.
Why would
you spend $14 to $16 on a catfish gripper when it's only $3,000 or $4,000 to the emergency room?
Exactly.
There you have it.
For $3,000 or $4,000, you can go to the emergency room, have pain
get
for a few
t-shirt.
Weeks.
Get a T-shirt.
Yeah, you know,
cool.
I mean, or you could, that little catfish gripper, but why would you spend that money?
All right.
It's wasteful.
No.
All right. Out in the Gulf, can we get there? And what are they catching?
You can get there if you really want to get bounced around a little bit. You know, some of the guys have been sneaking out on these days where it's a little calmer and doing pretty exceptionally well. 10 to 20 miles has been kind of the magic number for the guys that are going out.
Didn't the guy catch, like, scamps out there or something?
Yeah, he was at either 11 or 12 miles. He got into 6 scamps. They were all undersized, he said, but he still caught 6 scamps. I mean, to me, that's kind of weird because usually I don't hear about scamps until guys are in 80 to 100 foot of water.
I don't think there's any difference in the temperature between that 80 foot and the 30 foot right now.
Might not be, but it's just still a little unusual. But very, very cool personally, you know, because you go out there right now, you've had a lot less pressure out there with these fish because nobody can get out. The mangrove snapper have been pretty decent, you know, not giants, but they've been getting some 2 and 3 pounders out there, but the lane snapper are still doing absolutely incredible.
Lane snappers, do they live, grow up, and everything in the Gulf in the deep water?
Yeah. Yeah, they pretty much do. They will come into the shallows, but it's not a super common thing.
Because mangrove snappers are amongst the long list of fish that grow up in the canals, in the back bays, and as they get to be adults, go out into the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
What was it? Probably like 8 years ago, we started noticing how many gazillion snappers we had in the canals and on it. We kept saying, boy, next year we're going to have all these big snappers. And next year never came.
Right. They got sexually mature they or left, whatever, right? And they left.
Yeah. I had no idea mangrove snappers actually grew up in the backcountry the way a Goliath grouper and tarpon and everything else does. And right. Redfish.
Gag grouper.
They all do the same thing and leave when they get to be big.
Yeah.
And it's not fair because we have to put up with these bait thieving little three to 6-inch mangrove snappers that whole time. And then when they finally get big enough, now I got to go to the Gulf and catch them.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating. You know, but, you know, they've been doing some of the other fish they've been catching have been some trigger fish out there. There's been actually some pretty decent sized squirrel fish, which is another way underrated food fish.
Squirrel fish is rated as a bait fish, but it's actually a very tasty fish.
It's phenomenal. I mean, and guys kind of laugh when you tell them to eat squirrel fish because they're like, why am I going to eat that little thing? Because an average size squirrel fish is about, what, 6 to 8 inches long?
I'd say, yeah, about.
So my usual comment to them is, where are you from? And they'll say, well, Lake Erie, you know, that's where I used to fish. I'm like, you see yellow perch. You know, those
white
are
perch, yellow perch, they eat these 6-inch fish, 8-inch fish all the time.
Yeah, but they'll laugh at us about a squirrel fish.
And well, you know, same thing with bluegill.
Yeah.
And the shell crackers and stuff, they're 6 to 8 inches long. And brook trout, yeah, or rainbow trout,
rainbow,
even tinier.
Brook trout, these little tiny, tiny fish.
Yeah, get them in the hot butter and eat them up, you know?
Yeah.
So, it's squirrel fish, definitely a good tasting fish.
People just got to understand that, you know, there's some very, very fine eating bait fish out there.
One thing about if you're fishing in a canal off your dock or something, a great idea is to just simply freeline a bait out. You can actually fish with the current. So if the current's coming right to left, you go to the left side of your dock and cast out within 2 feet of a seawall. And just the hook, the leader, the line, and no sinkers, no bobbers, because most of our canals don't have a lot of current.
No.
There are a few of the canals that get a lot of water movement, but most of them it's pretty slower. So you can cast that out, and what will happen is it will go to the bottom, because just the weight of the hook will take it right to the bottom. I mean, it's not that deep, and there's not a lot of current. But what will happen with that little bit of current, it grabs the line and kind of like picture a sheet blowing in the wind. The wind picks up and the end of the sheet comes up and it goes back down to the bottom or like a flag. And that's what will happen with the line and your bait. It will kind of get caught up in the current and then pick it up a little bit and let it drop down. Your predatory fish want to be around some type of food source, some type of structure. They like the pilings to escape other predators. They can play ring around the rosy. So your snook, redfish, snappers, sheephead, any of the fish that you're actually wanting to catch and wanting to eat are from the outside edge of your dock to the seawall. All those barnacles, oysters, on the seawall, even if the fish are not interested in eating the barnacle or the oyster, they're interested in eating what lives in between them, in the little pockets and the cavities. Tiny little bait fish, little crabs eat there, and stuff comes to eat those tiny little baits, and they're there to eat that bait.
Right. You know, all that is the beginning of the food chain. It's every dock is its own micro habitat. You know, you start off with just dead wood, but all these organisms attach to it and grow up there. Your baby crabs turn into bigger crabs. You know, there's tube worms. You know, there's those what is some kind of burrowing worm, which is what causes a lot of those holes in a lot of the old pilings. There's actually a worm that digs into those and chews them up. Well, all those fish eat every one of those. Just because you don't see that food source doesn't mean it's not there. But you also said earlier with the current, even though it's a mild current usually in the canal systems, there's enough current that changes around those pilings that disturbs that sand and stuff like that. And that's why those fish like to really hang closely to those pilings.
Well, you know, I was speaking of how to, you know, young man's fancy is going to turn to sheephead. Well, some guys go the other way. They're going to go crappie fishing. They want to do freshwater. You know, I mean, they're not just one way. They're going completely the opposite way. And right
one
now,
black and white fish for another black and white fish.
Yeah, the canals up Northport are on fire with crappie right now off of Price. You've got so many of the lakes, ponds here. The crappie are all bunched up for the spawn. It's right at the start of the spawn. It's really starting to get on it right now. Port Charlotte Canal is doing pretty good. Cecil Webb is doing okay. Can you keep crappie in the web?
I think so.
Just can't keep the bass.
Read the
rules, because every management area is different.
And every pond, some of those ponds are very specific.
Some of the ponds are different, too. So you got to read the rules.
Even out in Rotunda, they've been getting some now. Yeah. Been getting some mixed reports on them.
Well, guys, it's an interesting time. We've got all kinds of stuff happening at Fish and Frank's. The weather's changing by the hour. It's hot during the day. It's cold at night. It's a wonderful time to be in Florida. If you're up north and it's dreary, rainy, snowy, whatever, it's awesome here.
Yeah, I heard we're going to be sunned in for the next week or so.
Yep.
You have to hunker down on the beach or on your boat or on your dock. And
just try and wait it out.
Try and wait it out while you're fishing, yeah?
We are going to endeavor to persevere down here in Southwest Florida. It could be rainy, windy, and snowy, but it ain't. This is Fish and Frank in the chair. Robert in the chair across from me. And the madness in charge of RJ in the control booth. Thanks, boys and girls. Bye.
I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
One right there.